Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech, driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Emily Hudson.
And I'm Derek Osborne.
And this is another edition of the Intel on AI podcast. Today's guest is Abhi Sharma. He's a machine learning engineer with Avamo. Welcome, Abhi.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on board. As a little bit of an intro on myself, you said it right, I'm a machine learning engineer here at Avamo. I joined about 2 years ago, and prior to that, I'm coming from a background in neuroscience, psychology, and music from the University of Rochester. Dabbled around with building my own company, and then joined Avamo on the heels of that. Avamo is a conversational AI company, kind of Alexa for enterprise, if you will. We basically build the capabilities for different companies and enterprises that they want using conversational AI as kind of the backbone of business processes.
Excellent. I was very curious about that. So you mentioned conversational AI. Any more specifics?
Sure. For example, let's say we have a healthcare customer or healthcare client. In the beginning, we'll start simple. We'll build sort of a website concierge for them, right? So people are coming in onto their website. They want to understand if I am a patient, and I'm looking for a provider within a certain distance from me, or maybe I'm looking for a hospital or a clinic nearby. What we would do is we come in and we turn that whole experience into a conversation with a virtual assistant, and they get kind of end-to-end relationship with that assistant, be able to get the answers that they wanted in a very conversational format. So that would be kind of a simple use case that we would develop with a healthcare client at the beginning. And at this point, we're integrating into the healthcare system's backend data and being able to understand what do we know about each of these patients that's coming in? What do we know about their personal relationship with the enterprise, with the hospital or healthcare customer? And then even more complex thing, and this is something that we're doing with one of our current clients, UC Health, is being able to do a virtual assistant that's actually assisting in diagnostic healthcare, right? And so we're actually building a bit of a research project going on with them where we're going to be doing IRB research approvals and trying to understand if we were to provide medical intervention using a conversational AI agent, virtual assistant, is that in the best interest of the patient? How did that kind of play out? It's really kind of innovative at the edge of what's possible with this field, which is known as natural language processing. And the use case would be, you know, a patient comes in, they present with certain symptoms, they have a conversation with this virtual assistant, and the assistant then understands what their symptoms are, understands the underlying disposition of the patient, potentially prescribes medication, right? We're now integrated into the back end. We understand that this patient has a particular pharmacy that they like their drugs sent to, for example. And so then the assistant directly sends the drugs over to that particular pharmacy. And this kind of interaction, right? And as you can see, it goes from very simple website concierge all the way to very complex kind of a diagnostic assistant. And so this is, in a nutshell, what conversational AI enables for different enterprises, and in this case, healthcare.
So is this limited to healthcare, or is this span a broad range of domains?
It depends, right? So depending on what enterprise that we're working with, we'll want to go very deep and have a very vertical assistant, meaning it has an in-depth understanding of the particular domain, whether it's healthcare, whether it's banking, whether it's finance, insurance, what have you. And so to kind of address that need, conversational AI companies like Avamo will develop very powerful vertical AI models, right? These models understand these particular industries and these particular domains really well. So for example, a vertical AI model built for healthcare would understand that when you say, I want to find a dermatologist, that a dermatologist is a type of person who happens to be a type of doctor, which means that you're probably looking for a doctor and not for a dermatology clinic. So it's kind of relationship hierarchy, which the term for this is building a knowledge graph. And so you have these vertical knowledge graphs, these vertical models. And Avamo has these for a bunch of different industries, healthcare being an example. We have one for retail, for insurance, for banking. And so that's vertical AI. And then the other way that certain enterprises like to play this is to go horizontal. So this is conversational AI where it's not as in-depth. We're not as integrated into a particular industry, but we're able to do things like, what's the weather? I want to order a pizza, or I want to order a Lyft ride to some location. And so it's kind of lower level, easy to accomplish conversational tasks that span a bunch of different industries.
Can you tell us a little bit about the data set required to create that vertical?
Let's say you're a new company, you're coming in and you're interacting with a conversational AI company like Avamo, and you want to build an assistant that's very good at some use case. If you don't have any data, you're essentially facing a cold start problem. You want to have this conversational AI capacity, but there's no conversational interaction data that you have to offer. And so one way to solve this is to have pre-built vertical AI domain models that understand that particular industry from the get-go. And we are able to do this at Avamo by having interacted with many different clients and many different customers across, you know, different industries over the years. And so we build these vertical AI models that are able to learn from these different customers in what's known as transfer learning. So you're learning about one use case, you apply that learning to another use case, and the underlying model keeps getting smarter and smarter and smarter over time. And so that's how we kind of develop and solve the cold start problem, is by using this vertical AI model. The other way is that the company that's coming in, they actually supply a lot of this data. And what does this data look like? It can be transcripts between, for example, in the website concierge example that we were talking about earlier, this would be the search queries that people are presenting to your website. That's potential data that you could feed into our system so that we can understand what are the things that people want to get done when they actually interact with our website. Another form is transcripts, as I mentioned. So let's say you have a customer service touch point where people are coming in and they're saying, my phone's broken, I need help, I need to fix this, I need help troubleshooting this. And then you have a live agent on the other end kind of guiding them through that process. This is, again, a customer transcript that you can then feed into our system, and we'd be able to understand what are the different things that people want to get done. And if we were to build a conversation out of that using AI, how would that look? And then, of course, the other way to present data to our system is in raw text, raw documents, PDFs, for frequently asked questions, FAQs about your company. You would feed those documents into our system, and we'd generate kind of a conversation based on, here's the things that people wanted to know about your company, and here's what a conversation would look like if you were to add that layer on top of those documents. So it's a bunch of different data sources that can be fed in, or you can already have pre-built models, and all we're trying to do is trying to solve the cold start problem.
When you talk about transfer learning, are you talking about you take the word embeddings from Word2Vec and you learn it in one use case and you can start off with those weights to begin with?
That's actually known as fine-tuning. A lot of the ways in which, I mean, this is obviously the trend going forward, is instead of using definitions and words that have specific meanings, regardless of context, a big shift has been to understand contextualized representations of words. So what I mean by that is, each word will have some meaning stored in some format that understands that in this context, the word apple means a fruit, and in this other context, the word apple means the company. And so being able to have this contextualized representation of words is key. Now, once you have that backbone, and this is developed using these things called language models, which we train over time by feeding in massive amounts of data from either Wikipedia or textbooks, it starts to understand what these different words mean in these different contexts, and it develops these representations, which are stored as vectors, as you mentioned. They're also called word embeddings. And then what you can do is take a particular use case. Let's say you have a global model that understands English. You can then fine-tune that to be really good at a healthcare use case or be really good at a banking use case by providing healthcare data. So the word embeddings that were trained to understand language-specific but context-agnostic understanding of the word apple now get fine-tuned to understand what the word apple might mean in a healthcare context. So that's fine-tuning. Now, transfer learning is when you train a model to be really good at one task, but in doing so, it also develops some proficiency in being able to accomplish another task. And so there's a very specific definition for transfer learning with respect to machine learning and with respect to deep learning. But in the context of conversational AI, what we're saying is once we learn how to build a conversational AI agent for healthcare, we're able to transfer some of that knowledge and transfer some of the pre-built weights that are underneath the definitions of these words and the representations of these words and use them in a different context for a new client that comes in, that's a new healthcare client. And even going beyond, use some of that learned representation in a context that's not even healthcare related to a banking or a financial context.
Abhi, thanks so much. This is fascinating. Love your description of how to avoid the cold start problem. I'm curious about the back end of your solution. And I understand you've been working with Intel and optimizing your proprietary NLU solution on Intel's Xeon Scalable processors, which is fantastic. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Sure. A lot of what is difficult in AI in general is computational power and scalability. Because we're dealing with so much data at such volumes, and we need to be able to process this really quickly in order to provide a very short latency in terms of the response to the user, a lot of what we need to do involves optimizing this computational efficiency over time. And so we've been able to be very successful by taking some of our algorithmic work, which is the proprietary and kind of cutting edge, and we've tried it on a bunch of open source hardware to get that kind of efficiency that we need to reduce the latency between questions and answers. And we found that the best thing we can do is actually use Intel's architecture because it's optimized for the particular libraries that we're using to do some of our AI. So you can actually take the efficiencies that you get by moving from a CPU to a GPU, for example, which is the difference in going from doing things sequentially versus doing things parallelly. And so there's a big kind of performance gain there, and that is kind of afforded to us by working with Intel's architecture. But also, because some of the actual libraries and the frameworks that we're using to build our algorithms are so perfectly fine-tuned to work on Intel's architecture, we're able to see many times more as we move into Intel's architecture to support our algorithmic work and also kind of reducing that latency between questions and answers.
Could you tell us a little bit about the libraries and frameworks that you're using that are performing well on Intel architecture?
Sure. There's a number of different things that we use, and it starts by using some of the work that's coming out of the academic community, right? This can be things like TensorFlow, PyTorch, Cafe, Siano. So there's a lot of different frameworks that we can use. And then what we do is we kind of build on top of that. And we worked very specifically with Intel architecture to use the libraries that are fine-tuned to work on that hardware. Really, there's no specific name for what we're doing because it's actually all new. And so it could be called like Avamo Intel libraries, right? These are specific libraries that we're building to be very fine-tuned in the environment that we're using them.
So it seems like the past year has been a real watershed for conversational AI. I'm curious, where do you see the future going?
So in 2008, there was a big moment for computer vision where it broke through and we understood that deep learning can have a really big impact on how we do computer vision. And that's led to just amazing applications in self-driving cars, facial recognition technology, what have you. That same type of moment took place really last year with the advent of deep language models. It's become somewhat more difficult to understand what these algorithms are doing, but what we trade a little bit in transparency and understanding, we're gaining so much in the proficiency and the capacity of these algorithms. And the future of this is really kind of up for grabs. It's incredible to think about what we can do if we really perfect conversational AI technology. Language is one of those things that is intuitively human, and it's one of those things that humans are very, very good at. We learn how to speak at birth, and we get better and better at it over time, and we do it intuitively. We do it without even thinking about it. And so to have some form of artificial intelligence that's replicating that, it can fit into any type of thing that humans do now that uses conversation. And it's going to get better and better over time. And so the application has the ability to really change the game and bring a lot of time and energy back to the experts in this field that can then focus on more complex tasks. A lot of the automation, a lot of the repeated drudgery of conversation, we hand that off to artificial intelligence and we let the more complex tasks go back to the expert and go back to the human. Conversational AI is going to enable us to do what we do better. The kind of combination of AI and human gets even more and more exciting as we have these systems that are able to converse as well as humans can.
You mentioned earlier that with deep learning, you get this trade-off that you have much better performance as you integrate deep learning, but then there's a trade-off of transparency. Within that, there's a risk of a bias. What are you doing within Avamo to mitigate the risk of bias?
Yeah, it's a really important question and one that at Avamo we're taking pretty seriously as well in two different ways, right? One is we want to reduce the risk of bias. And we also want to make sure that we understand what these algorithms are doing and increase the transparency. And so in both of these, it's understanding at the level of the data that we're feeding into our algorithms, we want to make sure that the probability distributions and sampling of that data is appropriate and it's representative of a population that is diverse and is not specifically favoring a particular demographic or a particular race, for example, or a particular ethnographic split. And so we're making sure that the data that we're feeding into our algorithms is very, very clean and sanitized from that perspective. But the other perspective, and I think this is kind of more interesting, is that we're also making sure our algorithms kind of speak to us as they're coming up with their decisions and as they understand queries and what answers to produce. Earlier, we talked about what are the data sources that Avamo's algorithms can input and how do we turn that into a conversation. So, for example, if we were to take in raw documents, raw PDFs, and generate a conversation from that document, it's a bit of a black box, right? It's hard to understand what is the algorithm understanding to be questions, how is it generating the answers. And so we force the algorithm, as it's generating answers, to spit out, here are the potential questions that people would ask if I were to give this answer, right? So it's actually retroactively saying, given this answer, given this particular solution that I'm providing, here is what people would have asked me, you know, in order to get there. And so it's little things like this where we're actually forcing our algorithms to speak up about what's the thought process, what are the different things that it's taking in, what are the assumptions it's making as it's coming up with solutions. And it's going forward, I think we're going to be implementing this in more and more of our workflows, as we already have, to get better visibility into how our algorithms are working and to prevent some of the bias that can creep in.
Touchy topic. And I think that as we get into the world of speech, it's going to be much more complicated than what we see with image recognition, because with an image, you can generally classify race or ethnicity. But one thing that's really interesting about speech and natural language is it can pick up on cultures, whether you be British or Northeast, West Coast, Midwestern. And so you have a lot more subcultures and subgroups to worry about when you start getting into the world of NLP. And so I'm really happy to hear that you guys are working so hard to tease out the bias.
An amazing example is there was a Microsoft virtual AI bot that was deployed on Twitter called Tay, and it was allowed to learn using real interactions with real people on Twitter. And as we all know, Twitter can be a hotbed of some of the most, you know, crazy conversations out there. And so the assistant understandably became very racist and very kind of violent. And so that was a perfect example of how having uncontrolled and unrestrained access to continuous learning over time can lead a model to become very biased and to become very corrupted in a sense. And so what we do at Avamo is we bring the human in the loop in terms of developing and improving and fine-tuning these models over time, where the human has an input to say, I want our virtual assistant to learn this X, but I don't want it to learn this Y, right? And so you're actually able to come in and fine tune the learning, which prevents it from kind of going astray, as we've seen in this case with Microsoft Tay.
Avi, thanks so much. This has been a great conversation. I really love the discussion around ethics today and what that means for natural language understanding. We would love to have you back on the podcast some other time to talk more.
Awesome. Thank you so much. If anyone wants to find out a little bit more about Avamo, please feel free to visit www.avamo.ai, and you can get all the information that you want about our conversational AI, about some of the work that we're doing with a bunch of different customers, and what's ahead for us.
Excellent. Thanks so much for listening today. This has been Emily Hudson.
And this is Derek Osborne.
And you're listening to Intel on AI.